I believe life is a gift for which I am grateful every day, even when it kind of sucks or completely does. Even when my anxiety is raging and inner peace feels way beyond my breath to recover. I believe we are here to partake, learn, enjoy, share, steward, and sustain together, to be present for all of it. I believe in laughter, and even more so when it is shared. I believe in magic and miracles. I know in my heart that it is love that is the animating and most powerful energy flowing through, creating, and continually healing the universe. Sometimes I even call that God. I believe in the ocean and its transformative and healing powers, the moon and stars for their expansiveness, and the hope and mystery they offered me as visual child lullabies when I would stare out my window for comfort before falling asleep. I believe in trees. I have had a lifelong love affair with them. I especially love them in winter when they show us in their nakedness what they had to do to survive. I love them for their resilience, majesty, and abiding connection to their environment and fellow trees. We had a sour green apple tree in my backyard when I was a young child. We shared its abundance with our neighbors each fall. Generosity was not typical currency in my childhood family, but through this yearly ritual, I learned that giving engenders so much mutual positivity and connection. That same working-class neighborhood in Queens, a town called Laurelton, the first long word I learned how to spell, where I lived from age 1 through almost 12, taught me so much about life beyond my front door and offered so many gifts. For one, our front porch was where I began to understand that life could be safe and fun. Parents sat out on their porches while we kids played in the street. People were kind and looked after each other. We had a seating area fronted by a garden space where azaleas and hydrangeas grew. My mother's nurturing instincts were all tendered on her flowers, and they flourished. I made the garden a sanctuary of sorts, a place where I could move in surreptitious closeness with my mother. There I learned that gifts, even when given inadvertently, can still be huge blessings. My grandfather lived with us until I was 4. He was the hero who stood between me and my father's rage. When my grandfather got remarried, he moved to Brighton Beach in Brooklyn, the ocean, and we visited weekly. The social psychologist Kenneth Gergen stated, motivational sources in our lives always have a relational source. It is not surprising that I spent my career working with and supporting elders, for sure part homage to my beloved grandfather. He died when I was 11, and I miss him every day. As the joke goes, I am Jewish on my parents' side. As the third child and first daughter, I wasn't offered a formal Jewish education, but holidays like Passover was celebrated as extended family gathering time, which was another part of the good of my childhood and another piece of what formed the nascent elements of my sense of connection and community's spiritual dimensions. When I was a young adult, I read about the physicist David Bohm's work on non-locality and how it relates to entanglement. Basically, that once two particles have been in relationship, even if separated vast distances apart, they will always be connected, relate to each other. This blew my mind, and yet it was like reading what I always knew intuitively. It also inspired me to read people like Ram Dass, Stephen Levine, Thich Nhat Hanh, and others. Also books on mysticism, especially about the Kabbalah and Sufism. I love reading about the intersections of psychology and mysticism and how it relates to the cutting edges of quantum mechanics. It has opened so many possibilities for understanding ourselves and the world in different and more loving, holistic ways. When I was 16 and a senior in high school, something remarkable happened to me, and yet it was really so simple. I was on a bus in the city, Manhattan, and there was nothing unusual about that. I was just out with friends. But I remember exactly where I was sitting on the bus. And as I looked across to the first seat on the bus, diagonally across from the driver, I saw an elderly woman sitting there. I don't know how old she might have been. I just know that to my 16-year-old self, she appeared old. But then we locked eyes. And in that moment, I knew deeply, spiritually, that there was no age, that she, like me, was full of life, hopes, and dreams. What came through to me, what I heard was, we are the same. I don't know how long we held each other's gaze. I don't remember afterwards looking back at her again. I don't know if she was even still there. I just know how profound the connection was. And in years since, I have wondered if she and I were one in a bending of reality kind of way, a world in which there really is no past or present. It was that life-changing for me. I can't speak to my spiritual journey without mentioning my years of involvement with adult children and survivor 12-step meetings and community. I didn't attend step meetings, but the framework and safety it provided was there. We shared our stories, said the hardest things out loud, the things that terrified us, and the things we were not proud of. We learned to trust each other and celebrated each other's growth towards integration and wholeness. And through that, we healed. I met the most brilliant, articulate, accomplished, good-hearted men and women in these groups. Some of us even started an evening and weekend hotline for adults who had been sexually abused as children, offering to others what we had built together. The hardest part of my story to tell is about Jerry, my partner of 4 years who committed suicide over 30 years ago now. The ground on which I had built my life, foundational beliefs like choose life, shattered. While still on the phone, I broke. I didn't see it coming, though the universe reached out with signs. I couldn't see what I could not imagine. I don't ask for help easily, and yet somehow, I was at my office door doing just that. It was a disembodied, I need help. And people came. Friends, colleagues, therapists, my sister. And they circled the wagons and held me up and together through the week of looking for Jerry's body, through the service and beyond. I truly believe I wouldn't have made it through without them. Showing up matters. For weeks after, I heard Jerry's music playing like her favorite Gregorian chants in so many places where it wasn't actually playing. It's as if I was living between worlds, like portals opened and the veil lifted. It's really hard to describe and put into words what I experienced during this time. It seemed to me I needed to explore where Jerry had gone spiritually and emotionally in order to end her life, like I had to travel there as well to understand better. I discovered there is a place of the soul beyond the metaphorical sign that reads, "Do not go beyond this point." And in traveling there, I found it to be a place beyond caring about embodied life or connections made, which I found comforting at the time. I also knew instinctually that I didn't belong there and needed to go back. But it wasn't until months later, while driving in my car, I heard the strangest sound that I couldn't identify. And almost immediately, I realized that that sound was coming from me. And in that moment, I understood viscerally, spiritually, that I had a choice. And as soon as I understood that, I heard the radio playing, and it was playing Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song, and the strange sound I had heard was me laughing. I love to paint. I started painting in high school. Over the years, I have started and stopped several times. In Charlottesville, for the first time, I had a studio in our house, and now I can't imagine not having one. It's really hard. I find inspiration in nature and the landscapes of my childhood. I am moved by themes related to home, its imagery, and evocative powers. The emergent process of placing paint on canvas is immersive and transformative for me. Often, I am surprised by what appears. It is my very favorite thing to do, the most purely me thing I do. Recently, I was on the phone with my dear and long-term friend, Polly. It was a meandering conversation about our lives, just catching up, And then suddenly, spontaneously, I dropped into a moment of pure love and connection. It was so brief and yet so complete. And I get it, of course. We can't be in that space every day while living our lives. It's seriously not practical, but it is my hope for when I die, for when we die, that we all disappear, dissolve into complete love. May it be so. Amen.